Hello and welcome to the next installment of the Monsoon Project, a channel to discuss international politics, culture and diversity of the Asia Pacific. My name is Guy Exton, an undergraduate student here at the ANU. This podcast is run out of the Crawford School of Public Policy at the Australian National University. And today our topic is populism. Populism hit the headlines in 2016 with the election of Donald Trump in the United States and the success of the Leave vote in the Brexit referendum. Yet, for better or worse, populism continues to influence democracies around the world, and may even be on the rise. A former cricketer, Imran Khan, was just elected Prime Minister of Pakistan, and President Duterte of the Philippines is in his second year of office. 2 years on, what have we learned from populism? To accompany me on a journey around the world's populist democracies, I'm talking with Jessica Ganawa. Jessica, could you start by introducing yourself and telling us what first interested you in international relations?
Sure. Hi, Guy. Thanks. As you said, I'm Jessica Ganawa. I'm a lecturer in international relations over at the School of Politics and International Relations at the Australian National University. And what really interests me in international relations more broadly is the question of how do actors relate to each other in the international arena? And how can we improve the way that actors relate to each other? Like, one of our biggest questions in international relations is, why is there conflict and why is there war in international arena, which is basically a breakdown of relationships between actors, right? So that kind of question has really motivated me personally. If I talk more specifically to what interests me about populism, I think that what interests me about that is the fact that as an international relations scholar, I want to try to understand emerging trends in the international arena so that I can then also understand what's driving those trends and kind of understand where are we going in the global environment, what are possible future directions, how can we understand sort of the trajectory of where we're going.
Yeah, that's really interesting, and I'm sure we'll address some interesting characters and actors today. The term populism gets thrown around a lot, but what does the term actually mean for our less informed viewers? And could you walk us through some of the definitions and key characteristics of a populist?
Okay, so that's a really good question, and it's actually not one to which there is a simple answer. I'm going to give you my answer. And I just want to say, first of all, that as you mentioned in your introduction, so with the election of Donald Trump in the US to the presidency, there's been this sort of rash of new books and scholarships that have come out regarding this phenomenon of populist political actors in established democracies. And that's kind of where I would put my focus today, is on this phenomenon of populism in established democracies. So that's kind of what's interesting a lot of comparative politics and international relations scholars right now. And so how do we define that? Well, a lot of recent scholarship that's come out, for example, Yasha Monk has just brought out a book this year. Pippa Norris and Ronald Inglehart have brought out a book. Stephen Levitsky and Daniel Ziblatt also brought out a book called How Democracies Die. So a lot of this scholarship defines populism according to two key characteristics, which I just want to lay out first because that seems to be one of the most common definitions that's going around at the moment, before I give you kind of like my own take on a definition. So that definition says that populism has two core characteristics. So first of all, as we might expect, you know, a kind of layman's definition, it's anti-elite and anti-establishment. So that's fine, and I think most of us wouldn't have a problem with that part of the definition. I mean, that's kind of, if we intuitively think of what is a populist actor, it's someone who's acting for the people, for the masses, and typically against some kind of elite or establishment. Then the second part of the definitions used by those scholars is that a populist actor is also in some ways anti-pluralist. So meaning that that populist actor is quite possibly trying to undermine some of the civil and political freedoms that have been established in long-standing democracies, and that in some ways they're not really comfortable with a whole lot of political diversity, which obviously political diversity is core to a democracy. That's kind of part of the whole point, right, of having freedom of speech and other kinds of political freedoms. that all voices can kind of be acknowledged and have a place as long as they're not doing explicit harm to others. So the second part of the definition of these scholars is that populist actors are in fact anti-pluralist. So they're kind of defining the phenomenon as something that is in some ways a threat to established democracies. Okay, so there's that definition, which is definitely like a very kind of prominent definition right now. Personally, if you ask me how would I define the phenomenon of populism, I think that we really have to take into account some element of what's called the populist style. And there are also other scholars who talk about this. Nicole Karatu at the University of Canberra and others who do talk about the fact that populism is also a political style. Now, why do I personally think that's important and how do I define that style? I think that's important because it's widely acknowledged that this phenomenon of populism has emerged due to a crisis of political trust in established democracies. So we all know that the feelings of kind of alienation from political actors, of your kind of quote unquote regular citizen, have been growing. There's been this increase in distance between, in terms of the feeling of how close average citizens feel to political actors or the political elite. And that this crisis of political trust in established democracies is in some ways responsible for the rise of populist actors. And so why do I think that the political style of populist actors is so important? Firstly, I think that that style can be defined according to a few components, which could be described as a style that is unfiltered, personal, and direct. And that's important because that's actually a mechanism through which populist actors gain political trust.
Yeah, absolutely. It seems that populism seems to be whatever someone wants it to be these days. And a lot of populist scholars such as Ronald Eaglehart, who have been speaking about it for years, are getting a lot of airtime at the moment. We didn't get very far without mentioning the man in the White House. So the most obvious example of a modern day populist seems to be the leader of the free world. Flashback to 2008, though, and Obama was elected on a very different promise of hope and change compared to Donald Trump. Now, this might be too big of a question, but briefly, how did the US get from there to here?
Well, in some ways, I think that the answer lies partly in, I mean, there are a few different elements or components to an answer to that question, of course. So there's kind of the systemic level factors that we have to mention, which is mostly the global financial crisis, right, which took place in 2008. And whilst I think that Obama dealt with that pretty well during his presidency, there were certain constituencies in the United States that really felt quite dissatisfied with what they felt was a decrease in quality of life and felt somehow ignored or left behind by the political establishment. So we have that kind of economic factors caused by the global financial crisis, and we can't ignore that and have to take that into consideration. And that quite possibly led to the election of someone who was considered, at least in the perceptions, far outside of the established political elites, right? As opposed to someone like Hillary Clinton, who was clearly a part of the established political elite. So we can trace it back to some extent to that whole series of events. However, I would also like to say, and this is going out in a little bit of a limb, and this is absolutely my own opinion here. I'm not drawing this from other academics or scholars, but I would also like to suggest that, in fact, the election of Obama and the election of Donald Trump are not as different as they seem at first sight. So if we go back to the whole idea of the crisis of political trust in established democracies and the fact that a political actor who really wants to do well, particularly in a country that doesn't have compulsory voting, right? So you need to get people out to vote. The mechanism through which you're going to get people out to vote is partly through developing some kind of trust in who you are and the fact that you're kind of a quote unquote, or at least perceived to be a genuine, authentic person who really cares, right? And I think that both Obama and Trump had that, at least Obama at the beginning of his first presidency. There was very much that kind of atmosphere around him. He is someone who's really for change, who really cares, who's very genuine, authentic. Never mind the fact that maybe that decreased over his presidencies, which is understandable and often happens, right, after someone actually gets into office. But I think that in some ways he actually did manage to, I'm not saying that he was a populist actor, but he did manage to create a kind of political capital around gaining the trust of people that voted for him. Like also around when he was first elected as president, a whole lot of people came out to vote. And so in some ways, I don't see, whilst their policy platforms are incredibly different, and obviously, you know, there's a huge sort of change in policy trajectory for the United States with Donald Trump, but in some ways I see that the mechanism through which they were elected actually wasn't that different.
Jumped on my next question there, and a lot of people are surprised to hear that academics like to compare Bernie Sanders or Donald Trump to Barack Obama even, despite their radically different economic and social policies. But so just touching on the same nerve, jumping across the pond to the Labour Party in the UK. The UK's Labour Party seems to be headed by a populist at the moment. Jeremy Corbyn seems to be a good example of a left-wing populist, though. We often associate populism with walls and billionaires, but could you discuss, as you already have, whether you think populism can cross ideological lines and what the differences are?
Yeah, so again, that's a really good question. And as I was mentioning at the beginning, a lot of scholars kind of deal with that question or tackle that question by just defining left-wing populism out of the whole phenomenon of populism, right? So as I was saying in the beginning, a lot of scholars just define populist actors as necessarily sort of anti-pluralist and really just focus in on the phenomenon of populists who have a very hyper-nationalist agenda. So we can think of people, or at least that's how they're perceived. So we can think of people like Trump or Viktor Orban in Hungary and other actors in Europe that have sort of sprung up and gained political popularity in recent years. So they're kind of on one side of an ideational spectrum, whereas people like Bernie Sanders or Jeremy Corbyn are obviously on another side of that ideational spectrum. And some people prefer to just discount them from the whole phenomenon of populism and say, oh, well, they're not really populist actors. I would say that that's in some ways willfully ignoring part of what's actually driving this whole increase in popularity of populist actors in recent years. So I would like to say that populist actors who have a kind of nationalist ideational agenda are one variant or on one side of a spectrum, but that we very much have to take into account upswell of popularity that took place for people like Bernie Sanders or Jeremy Corbyn. And I think where it's similar is the extent to which that was surprising or unexpected. Like I think there's something about a populist actor that they gain popularity from constituencies that typically maybe are not as engaged in politics or we're not expecting to turn out. And there's this kind of unexpected popularity that seems to surprise the established political elites. And we see that with both Jeremy Corbyn and Bernie Sanders. And I would also suggest that they both employ something of the populist style, which, as I said earlier, is direct, unfiltered, feels personal, is perceived to be somehow authentic, genuine, that person really cares about what they're saying. And both Jeremy Corbyn and Bernie Sanders very much, I feel, embody that populist style. And that was a lot of how they gained popularity amongst particular constituencies, especially amongst younger people, with both Bernie Sanders and Jeremy Corbyn. So even though they have a different ideational sort of policy platform, I think that you can definitely make some kind of comparison or analogy there if you're focusing on the style element of populist actors.
Populism is rife on the left and the right these days, but I'd also say that it's rife around the world and not just a Western phenomenon. In our own backyard, Imran Khan, a former cricketer, is Pakistan's prime minister, as I mentioned, and everyone knows something about President Duterte, a man who feels very comfortable not sounding like a politician in the Philippines. I could go on to talk about Indonesia and other countries in Australia's region. But I guess my question is populism that unusual of a political tactic, or is it the new normal, or has it been around for years?
Again, good questions. And I think that in some form, quote unquote, populism has been around for a long time, right? And we all kind of know that. And there were populist actors in Latin America for decades already that was talked about a lot in scholarship. I guess what perhaps seems different about this phenomenon, and I'm not sure if it is so different, but what perhaps seems different is that it's occurring in what are very established democracies. So we're seeing that also in Southeast Asia, that countries that are established democracies, admittedly newer democracies than some of the democracies of Europe and the US and the UK, but nevertheless established democracies, that we're seeing a similar kind of phenomenon where actors, political actors, are gaining a lot of popularity, seemingly because of the fact that they are perceived to be outside of the established political elite.
Would you mind using Duterte, for example, as a case study for that?
Duterte, and this again gets back to the question of, does the ideational platform of an actor matter for us to be able to call them a populist? And I would definitely say that Duterte is very much part of the same phenomenon that we can identify in people like President Trump in the United States. Whilst he himself identifies as being more on the left of the political spectrum, I mean, I think that in itself is somewhat questionable because he certainly has the same sort of hyper-nationalist rhetoric and policy platform that some other populist actors in Europe are employing, or Trump himself. He definitely, where we can draw a correlation there, is that he is definitely presenting himself to the Filipino people as someone to be trusted because he is not a part of the political elite.
And I guess another thing there is that his approval ratings are remarkably high for any democratically elected leader.
Remarkably high. And even though they've been going down a little bit in recent times, but remarkably high. And I would attribute that to the fact that he is absolutely consistent and congruent in his style. So his style of seeming quite spontaneous, off the cuff, like he's really saying exactly what he thinks, which is the mechanism through which he gains political trust, that style, even if there are some misgivings about, you know, his campaign against drugs and crime, which was also a big part of his popularity, that style has remained completely consistent and congruent throughout his presidency.
So just to get your opinion on where you think populism is going in the next 5-10 years, whether you think it's a brief phenomenon or here to stay. Another characteristic of populism is that it seems to damage political institutions, as we've already talked about a little bit. But how dangerous are current trends? Where do you see the established democracies in the next 5 or 10 years?
I think the answer to that question really depends a lot on the extent to which political actors more generally manage to understand what is driving the phenomenon of populism. So I would say that the direction that it's going to take depends on whether, like, I think that citizens in established democracies are really like craving political actors that they feel they can trust. So if political actors emerge that citizens in established democracies genuinely feel that they can trust, and those actors want to protect the political and civil, you know, rights and freedoms that exist in established democracies, that could be the direction that it takes. But there has to be that genuine element of feeling that this is a political actor that is really being personal, that is really being themselves, that I really can trust and that I really do feel cares, and that isn't just spouting some kind of political rhetoric or party line just because that's, you know, what they have to do as part of their political position. So I think a lot hinges on and depends on the extent to which political actors themselves understand that in a lot of ways that is what's driving the phenomenon.
I'm glad we got an optimistic note in there at the end, towards the end. But on that note, thank you for joining me, Jessica, and thank you for listening. This has been the Monsoon Project podcast. You can find us at themonsoonproject.org, and our Twitter handle is @monsoon_project. See you next time.